So now the High Middle Ages. First off, you have the continuation of regional states. We talked about the Holy Roman Empire before, signified by the crowning of Otto of Saxony in about 962. He's crowned Holy Roman Emperor. Now, I know that Charlemagne may have started this, but this is a strengthening of the actual boundaries of the Holy Roman Empire, which will mainly consist of Germany, somewhat of Poland, Czechoslovakia, and Austria, but not down into Italy. Then you have France. France will start to develop regional states by the Capetian dynasty, led by Hugh Capet. England will use the Norsemen's form of political governing, as William the Conqueror will cross the English Channel, win the Battle of Hastings, and begin to rule England. Italy is a little different. It really doesn't unify. Actually, it never does until in the 19th century. So therefore, it's epitomized by ecclesiastical and commercial city-states. So these are the papal states and territories that are sometimes called like Lombardy, and the city-states of Venice, Genoa, Vatican City, things like that. The Iberian Peninsula, which is basically Spain and Portugal, is going to see a reconquista happen where the Spanish Catholics regain control. This is combining the two kings of Castile and Aragon through marriage alliances. Portugal maintains its independent state structure, but they'll defeat the Moors and also kick Jews out of the territory, and so we have a Catholic dominance of the Iberian Peninsula. So let's talk about the economic and social situation of the High Middle Ages. The predominant theme that reigns through here is that the economy outpaces the political growth. And you can understand that this will cause problems with leaders being able to control their societies and sometimes causes societies to grow out of control. Matter of fact, even today some people talk about the timing and space of events is so fast that our political system can't keep up with it. But let's just talk about this. First off, you have the increase in agriculture. This is due to the draining of swamps. Whenever you see a lot of windmills in the Netherlands, they're basically pumping water from lowlands up into canals, draining the lowlands so they can plant crops, increasing their agricultural production. Clearing forests, so making the way for fields to grow more food, and developing the horse collars and the horseshoes that starts to implement horses to do a lot of the manual labor. So you're moving from humankind labor into animal labor phase. So in essence, humans are able to save calories as they actually grow more calories. The population of Europe will increase from about 30 million to 80 million during the High Middle Ages. Therefore, you developed labor specialization, where as cities start to grow and people don't have to look for food all the time, they will begin to specialize in a type of trade or craft. And so some people that are able to move from the rural countryside to the city can get a job where they're not a serf. So therefore, one of the terms is said to be city air makes you free. But let's talk about the Baltic region up there. We haven't really got into that before. That you're talking about Normandy, Sweden, basically the Scandinavia region and the Baltic Sea, Russia, Poland, Germany, Denmark. They are at a trade imbalance when you look at the powers of Venice and Genoa down in the Mediterranean Sea. So to combat that, they'll develop what is known as the Hanseatic League. So these countries join this trade league, which improves the speed of trade, causing an increase in their economy, and it begins to unionize them together as one type of culture, in a sense. So there's an example. And the business techniques get advanced in Europe at this time frame. First off, credit. If you can imagine, no one can really ever start a business unless they have a loan, because they know they're going to make a large profit in the future. Someone's willing to loan them money and give them credit. And although they have to pay back on that credit over time, maybe 5, 10, 20 years, they'll make a profit. So therefore, it's beneficial to start a business. The second thing that improves is partnerships. Because if several people go into the business, let's say 7 people do this, all seven are going to share the risk of starting the business. So if your business collapses, you will only owe 1/7 of what the business cost was. So this limited liability allows for the increase, because more people are going to want to start businesses, plus a bank might be more willing to give you a loan based on the partnership. Examples of this become the textile manufacturing region of Flanders. So Europe is now moving out of a feudal agricultural state and starting their manufacturing processes. If you compare this to China, China's been doing this already for over 1,000 years in the silk manufacturing process. Also at this time frame, you have travelers such as Niccolo and Maffeo Polo, who will move from Italy, move along the Black Sea, and continue to move east until they run into China. And therefore, there's the attachment between China and Europe. And later following this will be their son, Marco Polo. So throughout all this economic and social improvement, you're going to have the development of a middle class. And although it's at the very, very beginnings, you're now going to work out of the lord-to-vassal relationship and develop a more complex society with the middle class. Ultimately, middle classes are literate, they're large, and they start revolutions. Next is the spread of Christianity. The church is going to inspire literature during this time frame. So as more novels and books begin to get written, they are distributed throughout the territory, people start to read them, and therefore literacy rates improve, especially in the middle class. So with economies improving, this is going to support more cathedral schools, because that money can support the cathedral schools where they'll teach Latin, liberal arts. There'll be colleges that develop such as Cambridge, Oxford, the college in Paris, Seville, and Rome. And you see the development of faculty guilds that will maintain the qualities of education, and the developments of church cathedrals such as Notre Dame, Chartres, and the like. Also Aristotle. As you know, we've already talked about St. Thomas Aquinas, how he uses the concepts of Aristotle to bring logic to Christianity. Therefore, they'll reconcile Christian beliefs and create more study and logic of Christianity. Now what about the common people? Common people will stay glued to the Catholic Church through saints and sacraments. So the veneration of saints, sometimes also Mary, and through the acts of sacraments such as confessing to the priest. This will start to glue, well, already was prior to this, however it's going to intensify from 1000 to 1500. Religious orders such as the Dominicans and the Franciscans develop as they venerate those saints, and they still continue on with their concepts of denying materialism or preventing materialism from taking over. Even today, some people believe that our commercialization and materialization is a threat to religion. Okay, so just a brief summary of medieval expansion. You see this emphasis from Central Europe or Central Western Europe spread into Scandinavia and the Balkan territories. Scandinavian, you have Christianity being accepted in Norway and by the Vikings. The Vikings will then move across the Atlantic Ocean, discovering Iceland and Greenland. And so in essence, you're starting the Christian spread here. And then you have the Balkan influence. We have the Knights Templar, Knights Hospitallers, and the Teutonic Knights are like religious warriors that are going out to protect Christianity and to cause the conversion of people to Christian beliefs. And at first they especially have an honorable mission, but over time they start to develop their own ideologies. And even the Pope will eventually have to make arrangements to try to seduce or reduce the power of these knightly orders. In the Iberian Peninsula, you see the
Reconquista
happening, where ultimately this will be finished off by Ferdinand and Isabella as they eliminate the Moorish Muslims from the territory, convert everyone to Catholicism, incorporate the Spanish Inquisition, and in addition with this, they'll throw out Jews. And so the Muslims and the Jews were your merchants, banking, intellectual class. So in essence, they're getting rid of their best and brightest from their country. And this will, what probably terminates all this is hiring Christopher Columbus to go across the Atlantic Ocean to discover new lands for the Catholic Spaniards. And then we have the Crusades. We're not going to go into detail about the Crusades, just to know that Pope Urban feels threatened by Muslim advancements in the Middle East. You have the threats on Constantinople, and although they are Eastern Orthodox, those patriarchs are going to ask the Pope for assistance to save Constantinople. So this is all determined at the Council of Clermont in 1095. And if you can understand that if the Pope organizes a mission to save the patriarch, this will give the Pope political power. So there's a political motivation behind doing this besides a religious fervor. So the First Crusade will go out in order to reconquer Jerusalem from the Muslims who've dominated the territory. So as this crusade goes on its mission, they will fight through in the Palestinian territories, and they will conquer Jerusalem, and a lot of people will die. Eventually, a new Muslim, Saladin, whatever is written on the board beside him, will retake Jerusalem in about 1187, and so you have a confrontation between Crusaders and Saladin, where they actually ultimately understand each other's missions, and it looks like they could work with each other as long as Jerusalem can be allowed to be used as a pilgrimage for Christians. But you're going to have future crusades develop in order to reclaim these lands, and so the bloodshed basically doesn't end for a couple hundred years. And ultimately, the fourth crusade that goes through Constantinople stops in Constantinople. The Genoese and Venetian traders will actually talk them into sacking Constantinople. So the crusade doesn't go very far. They sack Constantinople. And as you know, Constantinople will ultimately fall in 1423. So really, the Eastern Orthodox patriarchs realize their weakness, and they have about 200 years to get out of there, which they do. And that movement from Constantinople back to Rome, in essence, will lead to the Renaissance. So, therefore, the Crusades were a political and religious failure. It did not solve any of those problems. However, from an economic standpoint, it was a success because the traders of the Mediterranean increased their trade with the Middle East, and both societies begin to advance based on that economy.